It's Joe Partavilla on the Forbes Books podcast, and on this episode, we are going to find out how an entrepreneur becomes a thought leader in 2023. What do you do? Write a book? Do a TED Talk? Dare I say, host a podcast? Well, now more and more entrepreneurs are becoming influencers on TikTok. You already know that the platform has over 1 billion active users spread across the globe, making it one of the hottest social media platforms. But how does a CEO go viral on TikTok? Well, my guest this week has spent the last 10 years working with influencers, artists, and entrepreneurs, and helped individuals build six-figure businesses from scratch. Her name is Danielle Hayden, and she is the founder of Dan's Rose Agency. Danielle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Joe. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, Danielle, the reason I wanted to get you on the pod is the fact that you are heavily involved in influencer marketing. And my first question to you is sort of like a grandiose question. What makes a good influencer? What are the skills? And I'm not talking about the folks that make a lot of money, or I'm just talking about the folks who are really good at it. What makes a great influencer?
Well, I think an influencer, for me anyway, is anybody who builds a lot of trust with people, who is genuine, and somebody that has something to say. And so what we perceive as a good influencer here at Dan's Rose Agency is somebody that creates impact, somebody that makes ripples. And so there's this concept that to be an influencer, you have to have millions of followers on Instagram, millions of followers on TikTok, which I don't think is necessarily true, because you can be an influencer with 5,000 followers, 10,000 followers. You can have a small but mighty following. And so what I measure an influencer on really is their ability to influence, you know, as they say, and truly, truly impact people, regardless of how small or big your audience is.
Great. And it's funny that analytics of the number and crunching data, it's kind of funny. We're recording this the week after The Last of Us premiered on HBO, which I'm not sure if you saw, but it's based on the video game. Very popular. It's like 99% Rotten Tomatoes. But they were popping champagne bottles at HBO because it had 10 million viewers. Now, as a kid, card-carrying Gen Xer, Danielle, if you had a TV show that had 10 million viewers, you were canceled the next day. So it is funny how you position and how numbers change and the importance of those numbers. So how do you lay those facts to people? Because I'm sure you deal with a lot of thought leaders who are like, I want to have 1 million followers. I want to have 50,000 subscribers to my newsletter. How do you coach them through the importance of those numbers and what you get out of them?
Well, the thing is, Joe, having lots of followers doesn't necessarily equate to cash in the bank. You know, you can have 300,000 followers, but not be making any money and not be making any impact. And I see this kind of thing happen a lot on TikTok. So, you know, it's pointless in having thousands of people in your database and thousands of people opening your newsletters, let's say, if nobody's actually purchasing. In terms of what we measure, it is by the impact. What action are people taking after having looked at your posts or your stories? How are people behaving differently after seeing your newsletter? How many people are actually clicking and purchasing? How many people are talking about you? You know, how many inquiries and referrals are you getting? How much organic traffic are you getting? So I think how we really measure the quality is as a result of the actions that people take and their behavior, whether it be purchasing or not, as a result of watching that movie or watching your channel, watching that video, opening that newsletter.
And I know a lot of your expertise deals with TikTok, and you've been involved with TikTok, from what I understand, for years, even before it was called TikTok. I think it was called Musical.ly back in the day. But what is it about TikTok? Why do you think it's just captured the imagination of people, especially young people? But, you know, obviously it's not just for young people only, but they've certainly been the generation that has sort of fueled the popularity. What is it about TikTok?
There's really something magical about TikTok. And you're right. I was actually on TikTok before it was TikTok. I was on it when it was called Musical.ly. And there were like a group of us over in the United Kingdom that kind of were on Musical.ly and posted and became creators and kind of grew the app together. So I've very much seen the transition from when the app was a baby until now, it being the, you know, TikTok empire that it is. And I think the point of where TikTok exploded was very much during the pandemic. During the first wave of the pandemic, we really saw the growth of that and people starting to use it, starting to enjoy it. And I think what made TikTok go viral is how raw the videos are, how real it is, and how expressive it is. You know, with a lot of other social medias, I don't know, let's say, for example, Instagram, sometimes there can be a culture whereby you post only your highlights. So only the most highlighted parts of your life, only the parts of your life that look perfect. But what I feel TikTok has done really well, it's really encouraged and empowered people of all walks of life to express themselves. And so it's less of a highlight app, less of a feel-good only, beautiful, aesthetic only app. And it's more of a hub where you can go to, let's say, learn new things, express yourself. And actually what I found with TikTok is that it's super, super easy to make friends. So for example, if you look at my little sister's generation, she's 16 years old. She's very much in the Gen Z generation. They use that to kind of make friends, socialize, learn dance routines. So you can imagine it's pretty much like an Instagram and a YouTube and a Snapchat all in one hub. And now with the rise of TikTok shopping, you know, you've almost got that Amazon feel to it as well, where you can literally go onto TikTok and watch a live stream, purchase your favorite products on there for really cheap prices, because of course the products come from China because it's a Chinese owned company. So there's just so many things on there and so many avenues, so many facets. It's been absolutely booming for music artists. You only need one song to go viral for you to pretty much go from being a bedroom artist to being an absolute overnight success with everybody in the world knowing your music, you know?
It's amazing how you mentioned about the impact it has on the music industry. And the one anecdote that I like to share is Sia's Unstoppable. That song, when it first came out, I think maybe like 10 years ago, was kind of like a mild hit. It was just, you know, one of those B-level Sia hits. And then all of a sudden, it spreads on TikTok because I believe folks in the Ukraine were using it as a bit of an anthem. And then the next thing you know, radio stations in America are playing it like it's a new song. And every once in a while, when a song like that pops up on the radio station or your, you know, Spotify, you're like, wait a minute, why is this song popping up all of a sudden? You're like, oh, it's because of TikTok. Why do you think the connection of music and TikTok has been so explosive?
I think there are a few reasons that TikTok has had such an impact in music. Number one, you can make a lot of, you know, dance challenges, dance routines that are very catchy on TikTok. You know, TikTok is full of people, full of young people who maybe have an interest in creativity, in the arts. So let me just give you a bit of background to kind of draw on this. When I was an influencer on TikTok back in my earlier days, one of the things that record labels used to commission me on was helping a song go viral via TikTok. And one of the ways in which we did this was through creating little dance challenges that were easy enough for complete beginners to participate in, but at the same time, catchy and fun to do. And so I think one of the reasons why music has caught on so well is because of these dance challenges and TikTok being a hub for dance trends and a place, a hub that people can go to learn these really cool viral dances. I think the second thing is that the subconscious plays a big part in this, because when you're scrolling through TikTok, going about your day, and you're continuously hearing the same little song, the same 10-second clip over and over again, especially when it's such a catchy song like Sia's, you find yourself throughout the day, I don't know, when you're doing the cleaning or the washing or whatever, singing that song. And then what does that lead to? Oh, what is that song? What's that little TikTok song? Let me go have a look on Apple Music and download the song. So I think that it plays a part in both the dance challenges that are available, but also, you know, the simple virality of hearing a repeated clip over and over again. And of course, when it comes to TikTok, when a creator is choosing a piece of music for their video, what's the music that they look for? Well, they look for a sound that is trending. Mm. So as an artist, really, all you have to do is get a couple of select influencers or a couple of select people with large profiles on TikTok to utilize that song. And just from that one simple action, that song can have a huge ripple effect. So I think why it's been so big for the music industry is because it's actually so, so easy for those songs to catch on. We did a challenge for Fall and Wad. I don't know if you know them, but they're a like dancey kind of indie duo. Mm-hmm. And that dance challenge got like 4.3 million views, and it was maybe four of us who are UK-based dancers with relatively large profiles that did the dance challenge. We created it, choreographed it, participated in it. And, you know, if you have a look at the hashtag on TikTok, hashtag Tokyo Challenge, you'll see that then thousands of people started utilizing that song and dancing in those videos. And, you know, the views are in the millions, and there were maybe four of us that choreographed and created that dance challenge, let's say with 300,000 followers each.
Wow, that's impressive. And I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about what makes TikTok so special, or as they say in the business world, its secret sauce, is the rawness of it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I can't really get into me being a content creator on TikTok, because to me, I'll only post a photo of myself when I'm, and which is one out of 100 that I feel is I'm confident sharing with the world, that I will post on Instagram. Or if I have a clever thought that I think I have, I will only post that when I think it's funny enough to post on Twitter. So I want to connect that to today's entrepreneurs. As you know, business owners, CEOs, it's all about putting on that perfect shine, showing your best self. How do you talk to prospective clients, entrepreneurs, business owners who are afraid to share their warts and all on TikTok?
It's really funny because, you know, people care less on TikTok about what you look like or how you're presented, and they care more about what you have to say. And so, you know, I've made videos where I've spent hours on the editing, making the setting look beautiful, the aesthetic, presenting myself perfectly. And then I post one video of me doing a rant, basically, and, you know, just spewing my thoughts in my brain and, you know, a million views. So I think with TikTok, it's very much bite-sized information. And the main thing to consider on here is, you know, don't worry so much about how you look or how you're presented. It's more about what you have to say. People are interested, you know, for example, TikTok and the way it's being branded and marketed now is the number one bite-sized learning platform. Mm. So, you know, TikTok as a platform are pushing raw videos, whereas maybe on Instagram, you'll hit the algorithm with a beautiful polished photo. But TikTok is very, very different to that. Raw videos are being pushed, especially with the likes of hashtags learn on TikTok. Hashtag learn on TikTok is a consistent trending hashtag that the TikTok HQ are pushing because they are trying to encourage more knowledge and learning-based videos. So I would say if you are an entrepreneur with a particular expertise or skill in a particular subject or area, share your knowledge, share your wisdom. And it doesn't have to be you trying to dance or participate in dance challenges. It doesn't have to be you posing on a beautiful yacht or private jet or with a beautiful aesthetic photo. People want to know what you have to say. And there are so many young people these days that are using TikTok as both their social media platform and their learning hub. Mm. You know, if you speak to my sister who's 16 and you ask her what social media she uses, barely YouTube, barely Instagram, it's TikTok and some other social media called Be Real and maybe a bit of Snapchat. But TikTok is very much the hub for people to learn. So I would say my best advice would be think about what you have to say and don't worry about how the aesthetic is, because the algorithm doesn't necessarily look for aesthetic. The algorithm looks for how many people are commenting, how many people are saving, how many people are sharing on WhatsApp.
Hmm. And you've used the three-word phrase, something to say, a couple times in this conversation. And working with thought leaders at Advantage Forbes Books, it's always the first question. What do you have to say? Do you have something to say? And I think for a lot of people, they don't know what what they want to say. They want to say something, but they don't know what exactly that thing is. That, you know, they could be super successful in a industry and be like, yeah, I'm successful, so I should be an influencer. But then the question comes to, what do you have to say? So is that one of the first hurdles when you're dealing with clients about what is that say? What is their purpose in becoming an influencer?
Yes, I would say so. But, you know, at the same time, it doesn't necessarily mean you always have to be saying things. I guess the real question for me is, what kind of impact do you want to make? So maybe you don't have anything to say, but maybe you have a particular lifestyle to showcase. It doesn't necessarily need to be a luxurious lifestyle, but maybe it's a harmonious, a peaceful lifestyle. How do you want to make people feel? What impact do you want to have? But I think it's always worth asking the question, what do you have to say? What message do you have to share? And what do you want to be known as? What do you want to be remembered by? Because I really believe that people don't necessarily remember so much what you say, but how you make them feel, right? So when you're considering, okay, well, what do I have to say? Consider, what do I have to say? And how do I want to make people feel with what I have to say?
Interesting. And, you know, nowadays, many people, their career track is not linear. Back in the day, it was go to college, have the get a job, maybe switch a couple times, and then retire when you're 65. Now people kind of, it's a more nonlinear approach to a career. And you've sort of lived that as well, because from what I understand, your first entrepreneurial venture, you were 17, then you became a dancer, then you became an entrepreneur again. Can you just give us a quick synopsis as to how you got here and were able to found Dan Rose Agency?
Oh my God, yes, yes. I had my first business when I was 17, 18. It was a little e-commerce business online. So half of my family is from Thailand on my mom's side. And I was actually importing and exporting goods from Thailand, specifically in the homeware sector.
I was going to say, hopefully this was legal. Hopefully this was legal stuff you were dealing with from Thailand, right? Everything was on the up and up?
Yes. Yeah, it was legal. It
okay,
was
good.
Totally legal. So I was importing like homeware furnitures, and then reselling them on the likes of eBay and Amazon. And with that, I made a little bit of money. I was living in London at the time. I was actually at university at the same time, but I got to 3 weeks in and I just thought to myself, oh, I can't do this anymore. It's just not for me. Look, I'm not discouraging people to not do uni, but for me, it wasn't a place where I thrived. And so I was doing my little business. I then had a little bit of money, like maybe 2 months of rent left before I had to find something more permanent. So I had a little bit of money that I was making from my shop, but it wasn't so sustainable to keep me going living in the center of London City. So I decided at the same time I would get a little job to supplement my income. And I got a little job. My eBay business started to grow, my eBay and Amazon, as I got the job. So then I quit the job, decided, okay, right, I've got some better money coming in from my business now. What am I going to do? I need to find what I'm truly passionate about. So my true passion at the time was dancing, but I was always taught that you can never make a career from dancing. It's not a real job. You're never going to be wealthy. It's going to be very difficult. There are no jobs in that industry. So, well, I started training and I became a dancer, but I only started learning at the age of 21. I decided, okay, cool, I'm just going to go for this. I started going to auditions. I got some work in TV commercials, music videos within the dance industry. But the problem I had was that I loved dancing, but I just hated not having money. So then I decided to merge my passion for the arts with my savvy business background. And I created a dance school, which actually did super, super well. It was a brand new business model as well. It was at the time before, you know, Kajabi and Patreon became popular. So I had adopted a membership model, whereas typically for a dance class, you pay £10 per ticket. And so my business model was super sustainable. I was then upselling people into one-to-one coaching packages. And so out of all my peers, I had this really lucrative business. Meanwhile, a lot of people around me in the dance industry were struggling and struggling to get numbers and people in their classes because it's really difficult to make good money from selling your classes at £10 per person. And kind of how it stemmed out was during the pandemic, all of the dancers lost their dance school, their jobs. Mine was pretty much the only one that survived amongst my peers. And they started asking me for advice. So I started giving free advice, helping them rejig and readapt their business models. Then it stemmed out to yoga people, yoga teachers, personal trainers, fitness people, coaches, consultants, and the spiral pretty much grew from there.
Wow.
And that's how Dan's Rose Agency was birthed.
Amazing. What a great story. And so I'm curious because I know a lot of people like to believe that TikTok is, it's a kid's game and it's only, you know, it's only Gen Z and now whatever the next one I think is Gen Alpha. But what do you say to folks who are, you know, old dogs, new tricks? I mean, you became a dancer at 21, which is very rare. I mean, you kind of just slipped that in there. Yeah, yeah, I became a professional dancer at 21. Most people don't do that, as you know, Danielle. So for folks who are a little older than your typical Gen Zer on TikTok, what do you say to them when it comes to becoming an influencer and using TikTok as a driver for that?
Oh, I think anything is possible. I mean, by the way, I didn't become a dancer at 21. I learned to dance at 21. I became a dancer at maybe 23. That was when I started getting professional work. So, you know, in the dance world, you're basically a granny, let's say, a grandma.
Right.
So I think that age doesn't really matter on TikTok. You know, think about it this way. If you have been able to thrive and build a business offline, which is much more difficult to do than to build a business online, you know, I would imagine some of these people who are from the older generations had to do door-to-door sales and the likes of that, which is much more difficult. They probably have a lot more to say, a lot more to share, and a lot more hardcore experience within the business world. So I actually think that, you know, my generation and the generations below can learn a lot from these people. In fact, there is one person who is a more mature woman that I do follow on TikTok. I actually can't remember her user handle now, but she's a real estate woman. And she posts a lot of amazing information about how to survive in the real estate world because she survived multiple recessions as a realtor. So I think that we can learn a lot from them. And I think there is a huge opportunity for this generation to really spread their wisdom and knowledge, which maybe is not available to us right now.
Hmm. And some of your clients, are they basically Gen Z millennials that you deal with, or do you deal with multiple generations of folks within Dan's Rose?
Most of my clients tend to be female millennials. However, I do have a couple of clients who are slightly older, in their 50s, let's say. Some that have never had a business in their entire life. You know, we don't have a restriction in terms of age. It's really just who feels drawn to us, but mostly millennial women. But we do have some women in their 50s working with us right now who want to adapt what they have into the digital world. We have a beautiful Reiki master that built her business offline and is looking for the best way that she can translate the magic of who she is digitally.
I'm also curious about your relationship as an entrepreneur, because I know that you mentioned that you're an entrepreneur as a teenager and now you've carried it into your adult life, but you always had sort of a difficult relationship with money and finding your worth, whether it's from your dancing days or till today. And I think that's one of the things entrepreneurs struggle with today It's what's your worth? What value? What number do you put on your product or service? You've mentioned in the past that you've had issues with that. How were you able to come to find what your actual worth was?
Oh, yes. I've had so many issues with that. You know, to give you some context, I grew up on a council estate in Birmingham, England, from a mother who came from Thailand and immigrated to England, who didn't have a job, couldn't speak the language. My English family is very working class, amazing people, but, you know, very much working class. My family in England, they're a generation of builders. And in Thailand, they didn't even have work. They didn't even earn money. They were, you know, jungle people. My grandfather was a snake bite doctor, but he didn't even charge his patients. He used to exchange that for food. So when you've come from a background whereby, you know, money has always been a struggle and unattainable, and it's in your lineage, that definitely has an impact. So choosing my pricing, my worth, that's been one problem. But the other problem was then attracting a higher level, more lucrative kind of customer, because, you know, from my background, something like that just seemed completely unachievable, like so out of reach. So in response to your question, how did I elevate my worth and start charging accordingly? Well, it's very much a process. I didn't always charge accordingly. When I first started my business, you know, in the beginning, I was charging very little. I was charging like £1,500 to work with me, which for the work I was doing is nothing. And so I think for me, how I started to really gather what my worth was from realizing the transformations that were happening. You know, we were taking people from being on universal credits to getting five-figure commercial deals. We were taking people who haven't booked an acting job for 4 years because of anxiety and depression, and suddenly they're getting booked for a Netflix movie. We've taken somebody who was earning $1,200 a month, struggling, running around London, trying to find jobs, into making, who is now making 10 grand a month. So I think how one builds their worth is simply through experience and through seeing the transformations that you create for people, because it wasn't always that way. You know, I'm somebody that generally gives everything my all and invests all of my time, energy, resources into that person when I work with them. And so, you know, I was charging very little, but investing all my time, energy, and money into making that person successful. Wow. They were successful, but then it was like, ah, okay, but no, I actually need money to live. Ah, I actually need to pay my rent. Oh, I actually need to pay my bills. So, you know, as your demand grows and as word spreads about you, of course, more people are going to want to work with you, right? And there comes a point where you can't take everybody on because there's just not enough capacity for it. So then what's the answer? The only answer is to raise your prices. That's the only solution.
And as someone in your field, it's not like you have years of data to look up and be like, hey, how much do people charge for this line of work? How did you eventually come upon your number?
Well, I didn't look at how much other people were charging. I didn't ask any mentors. I didn't ask for any price indications. For me at that time, to be honest, the money wasn't even something that was in my consciousness. Like, I wasn't even focused on the money. I was focused on getting the person the result. But as we started to get more and more results and more crazy case studies, it was a question of, okay, cool. How much do we need to cover costs for what we're investing? How much time are we utilizing? Right. What is the transformation? Like, how quickly are people getting results? How are their lives changing afterwards? In the beginning, it was still very much, okay, cool. What do we need to cover costs to charge for time? This, that. But as the time went on, and as I started to expand and take on more and more clients, it started to become a thought process of, okay, cool. This takes a lot of time, energy, and resource. So how much do I feel happy and delighted to work for? Because what was happening was I was just charging on the back of expenses. How much do we need based on our time and what we're allocating? But then I was starting to get a little bit resentful because I had no time and I felt like I wasn't being compensated financially. And, you know, in business, the worst thing you can possibly do is feel resentful towards your work and towards your clients, because you're basically conditioning your subconscious mind to hate making money. So if every morning you wake up, oh, I got another client. Oh, I'm not earning enough. Oh, God, this sucks. You're basically telling your consciousness, I don't like this. I'm having a bad time. I hate this. So then what happens? Well, source, God, the universe is going to go, okay, cool. We won't give you anymore. And I realized in that moment, oh, this is not good. I'm waking up feeling drained, feeling like I'm not charging enough, feeling like I'm giving everything I have, but I'm not able to afford a holiday. This is not good. I need to reframe the way that I'm doing this, because I need to condition my consciousness to love making money, to wake up in the morning super excited to see my clients, because that magic then translates into the work that I do, which then will condition the universe, God, source, or whatever, to love making money, love serving my clients. And as a result, what is going to happen? More clients are going to come my way. More wealth is going to come my way. If I'm waking up in the morning speaking to my clients full of joy and ecstasy, that's going to ripple onto them. And guess what's going to happen? They're then going to talk about me to their friends, and the referrals are going to come in. And that's what did happen. So in answer to your question, how I started to dictate my prices was because I got to a point where I was way undercharging. I wasn't thinking about the money. I was only trying to cover my costs and my time, and it wasn't sustainable. It was actually making me a little bit drained and resentful. So hitting that rock, hitting that point, was the pinnacle of that decision for me.
Wow. And lastly, TikTok. It's currently pretty damn hot. I don't need to explain the number of millions of people that are using it right now. Is it here to stay? Because I know we've had a lot of these social media platforms sort of peak and valley, come and go. I mean, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter have sort of been the constants. But is TikTok here to stay?
I would say TikTok is here to stay, and it's not a platform to be underestimated. Why? Because they are incredibly innovative. I don't know if you're aware of some of the changes that are taking place on TikTok at the moment, but they have the release of TikTok shopping in beta mode. You want to think of it as TikTok meets QVC. And you have channels, fashion channels, makeup channels selling 24 hours around the clock. So my opinion is TikTok is not going anywhere, purely because there are so many revenue streams and so many ways of making money. You know, TikTok, you can now buy paid ads for your business. TikTok, you can now go on TikTok Marketplace and connect directly with brands without the need for an influencer marketing agency if you're a creator. If you are an entrepreneur that wants to sell fashion or jewelry or makeup, you have TikTok shopping. So they're constantly innovating, and there is something for every single kind of person and something for every single type of consumer. So it's becoming like, it's not even becoming a social media channel anymore. It's becoming a hub for everything, for purchasing, for social media, for friendship, for learning. It's, you know, incorporating the whole YouTube vibe where you can learn things. So in answer to your question, I don't think TikTok is going anywhere. Is it going to stay the same as it is? Probably not. I think it's going to continue to innovate, and I think there's going to be more and more facets and branches to what TikTok currently offers. And I think it's only going to grow and evolve into more opportunities, more directions, more pathways. You know, it's a platform with everything for every type of creator and every type of consumer. So in my opinion, it's here to stay. I actually remember when Musical.ly was on the up, and I was using Musical.ly back then as a dancer, and all of my friends were saying to me, oh no, that app is dead, that app is rubbish, that app is for kids, it's gonna die really soon. And then what happened? You know, look at it now. So I think TikTok is here to stay, and I think it's here to stay but I think it's going to innovate and get even bigger. I think it's going to expand its facets.
Awesome. So short answer, yes, Danielle, I think you're
I love TikTok. I'm a big fan.
No, I definitely feel that. If folks want to work with Dan's Rose Agency, what's the best way to reach out to you, find out more about you, Danielle?
I think the best way is to have a look at us on Instagram. My handle is @realdansrose. And have a look at our customer case studies, have a little look at the work we've been doing, the kind of people that we help, and just shoot me a DM. It is me that manages my Instagram. I'm always in the DMs, happy to connect with people. So shoot me a DM and let's chat, let's connect. We're a super friendly team, super friendly bunch, and we love connecting.
Excellent. Her name is Danielle Hayden. She's the founder of Dan's Rose Agency. Danielle, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great conversation.
Absolutely. And that's it for this episode of the Forbes Books Podcast. If you enjoy the show, make sure you take a second to subscribe so you automatically get new shows when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love if you left us a review so more amazing entrepreneurs like yourself can discover the show. And please don't forget the golden rule and treat others as you want to be treated. Thanks for listening. Until next time, adios.